in my understanding of both of these are global. This is where we need to, but I'm going to give you a very simple example. He started work this morning and he gets to be some tea and some biscuits now. Perfect, I don't have a problem with it. But a local government, when you walk in, you get tea and biscuits. An hour later, you've got all the snacks coming in. 2 hours later, you've got an entire lunch appearing. So in 3 hours, you've got three meals. I'm absolutely serious. In 3 hours, you've got three meals. You don't have to eat for the next day. Now, we say we're cutting on these things. What mechanisms are we going to put in place? Because whilst here, our intentions are good and we want to implement this, how are we going to see through right to the ground to ensure that those people, local government, level and provincial, comply and also exercise in bringing these things? Otherwise, the entire exercise that you're putting is a very futile. And that's what I'm worried about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The statement made by Professor Guy about that the students won't even be able to read tables, that must be a little concerning, because we see a lot of analysts and researchers here, they would not be able to write loads of documentation without referring to tables. So I think that's just a point that needs to be referred to the Department of Education. The other issue, most of us here, if not all of us, come from the public. Some of us come from the rural areas and some of us come from the far areas. So we need to look at the needs that we bring from those rural areas and from those public that don't have access to this parliament and have that information, those needs converted into numbers. I think that's important. So in terms of our oversight responsibility, I think it's important that we bring the needs, the service delivery, the houses, and that's hospitals, the schools, and obviously that needs to be converted. So I would imagine that would be the responsibility of the public budgeting office. So that would be from my side. Then just a few questions, maybe some clarification, if I just allow me to refer here. The slide that deals with economic performance, and you'll see that the estimated growth is reducing rate. So what I don't see there is maybe it will help us to convert that reduction in economic growth to jobs. In other words, what are the loss in jobs that can help us to think of that? Interest expenditure keeps on coming up in the presentations in these committees. Now, I think it's also important that we are given some sort of a figure to assist us. We have increase in debt, we have increase in cost of capital, sorry, cost of expenditure, but I think we need to just see what that increase is going to be. I think it will help us in improving this. I look at the page, the slide that deals with non-interest expenditure, and that is the one where it shows that again, the other wage bill is increasing, but at the division rate in this case. Now, that is a challenge, I believe, and I'm sure, you know, it would be interesting to know how that is going to happen, that decrease in the wage bill. The next slide that deals with interest expenditure, the second last point there talks to federal government debt could grow beyond an estimated level. Now, I think it would help if we rather have what is called an acceptable level instead of an estimated level. Because, I mean, estimated could go to the extreme, then we just keep on estimating and not accepting. That's all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think it was honorable. Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Got one small question, Fred. If you could just explain a bit more about what is meant by non-interest expense? The first thing that one assumes is the depth of the wage bill, but what else is that is considered non-interest expense? But secondly, the president in the State of the Nation address said that the, our economy needs to grow by 5% by 2019. What is this that we as government and country really need to do to turn the situation around as we see it in the on the second page and throughout this presentation, turn it around to the extent that we can begin to move towards that 5% and achieve it, and there's go beyond that. I know that there are a number of things that one can immediately count on, the growth of the SME sector, the cooperatives, expansion of economic activity into the FTZ, etc. and so on. But those are just broad things. I worry that that we see the situation we probably see the broad programs of the government, but one worries that we have an urgent task to start turning the situation around. And my worry is, what are specific things that need to be done in the immediate and the medium term, so that we arrive at 2019 and say to ourselves, we are closer to 5% or even have achieved beyond 5%. Thank you.
I think, especially on monitoring. I don't know if a prophet in the statistics that were read out or has been fine. Was it fine here? Yeah. When we talk about monitoring, are we really aligned to what the Fed says? I wouldn't like you to maybe to answer the question today, but I would ask if you can make that a symbol for me as a rural woman to actually say we are putting the bulk of the budget on education, but the Fed says this. I want to know if we're giving value for money, and if we are not, how much are we losing? What is it that we can do to make sure that the money really works for us? That's one. The other one, you know, I've got a little gadget which I like to play with. I think over the weekend I saw this face. I know this guy. They say the very educated economist. I don't know what economist is. But he said something that actually I woke my mind. He said any country would be very unwise to follow the U.S. because they are at the bottom. I do not understand what you are talking about, because what I know is that the South African media is very fond of, you know, talking greatness about the U.S. and down with South Africa, you know. So I just want you to make it what does you get me? I also heard that America was using another big term, but they are printing money, you know, they print money to take quantitative easy, something like that. Yeah, but they don't remember it. What is all these things? Is it a useful tool to boost our economy? Quantitative easy and yeah, something like that. Thank you.
you very much, Honorable Mark.
Thanks, Chair. I think my colleague covered me in some of the questions, because my concern was around the issue that I think we have the appropriations and also PPO have an interest on the outcome when we have already appropriated funds to different departments. I think my colleague had mentioned the issue of education. When my colleague was doing the presentation here, she indicated a deep dive in education. Have the PPO ever made an analysis of the outcome, whether we are getting value for money? If not, I think this is something where the chairman that we have to deal with, because we can't just give money, and this presentation is getting lower group, less revenue, everything, you see, debt, deficit, you know. I think we'll end up paying even to service this debt if we don't really deal with the issue of monitoring. Not only the Department of Education, Honorable Chair, the social wage, social grants, and so on. If we don't have, if we can't link those beneficiaries to the programs that will develop them, I think we'll end up pumping money. We're talking during the break to say that even on the issue of housing, we're talking about households. One is concerned about the policy that we have of the housing, the low-cost housing, that we can just give a person a house, after 8 years that person sells the house or rent the house, you know. This is the only country that is doing that. Because other countries, when you give a low-cost house to an indigenous person, when that person becomes right, takes this house back to the government and give to the people that are in the waiting list. Maybe we need to analyze it in the policy, because we end up like, you know, keep on pumping money, but the policies that we have are not strong in a way that they can assist government, you know, to overcome the challenges there. And also the monitoring side of it. You know, people, you give a person a house, that person tomorrow is not there, other people are staying there. You know, that person said to the government, I don't have means to have a house. Maybe something that we have maybe to analyze whether we are getting the look for money, and also around the social wage, to check whether we link into the programs that will really develop those people, because we are not a welfare state, we are a developmental state. If we are a developmental state, whatever we do, it must point to the direction. And the other question that I have asked the Honorable Chair, maybe I can say that it's so scary in that report, that we are saying we are having a challenge of economic growth in our country, but we don't know the root causes. You know, how do we deal with it? If ourselves, we are not yet understanding what are the real root causes, maybe we request Honorable Chair, the PPO, maybe to bring on this particular thing to analyze, as our one was asking, to say what other economic sectors are the contributing factor to the shrinking of the economic growth. So this is a question. Maybe if we can request them to go deeper, make a research, maybe come back, so that when we are saying that we are having a challenge of economic growth, we know what is it that we are dealing with and what are the other measures that we can do to try and intervene on those particular sectors in the government.
Back to the team. I guess one of the organizing factors, the thing that cuts across is the issue of, if the economy is not going to grow by 2.7% as predicted, then what are the implications to the discuss? Because clearly you have less revenue than you had anticipated. What's going to be the impact? Sometimes people So if I, we can still do all the things that society will do, the question is how with less money. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of arguments that come into it, reprivatization and efficiencies, etc. But the truth is that there will be some impact on spending. Because even with reprioritization, the question is, what do you reprioritize? There can't be anything that's said to be unimportant. So it means our role of monitoring also have to watch those things. What the department reprioritizes, if they have less money, and so on. But let me give over to the team to share with us your views before that.
I do want to ask this question before the team answers whether it is possible, it's not time, Parliament, perhaps with the help of the recent modern bodies, to. And I say Parliament because we are representing the people. It is not time for Parliament to take people into court against and begin to say, here we are, this is the economic climate the country is in. Without really raising alarms and making people feel discouraged. We need to turn things around. We need to tighten the belt, all of us. Perhaps let's start off with ourselves. The wage increases, etc., and so on. And then say to all 51 million people, put your shoulder to the wheel in whatever way you can. So that we can think around. I say this understanding that the cost of living has gone very high. If you say that to the people, what then do you say to those who control the prices of goods and services? Maybe we have a story to tell them as well. But on the other hand, if you say that and it translates into less spending by the general public and by government, you are then reducing the opportunity to have the economy grow. So, what are the balancing acts that we need to take? Not just with government, because it's easy for everybody to say government, you must create jobs, and we know that government does not have the big industry to create jobs. It does create the environment. What is that environment? Legislatively speaking. We know that the private sector has the capacity. What do we say to the private sector? What do we say to the workers who every time they grow into, they get into the wage negotiation system, you know the strikes are coming. What do we say to them? So if all of these things that I'm saying, is it not time that we take the public into consideration and begin to say, in the interest of South Africa, let's do X, Y, Z, and things around it. I raise this issue because first you must go to Ireland and begin to look at what they did a couple of, some years back, not just a couple, some years back, where the workers began to say,
Look, let's agree we are not going to ask for wage increases for X number of years. Turn the economy around and then from the end of the year. Maybe those some of the deputies must go ahead and get them cared for. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Prof. Yoshim.
Honorable Chair, I'll just very quickly respond and then ask the team to contribute very quickly as well. I just want to say there is a report available as well here besides this. And the first question I want to ask you is look at the report and the presentation and is there the format that you want to see? Is it the technical format that you want to see? Well, you will have an executive summary as well in the front, okay? To put a bit more in play language, but that's not some of the things that the FI report is already like it.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get down to that.
Yeah.
Sure, I think just in terms of summary, you've written now on the issue. You indicate the growth is down. I think this is the message that I'm asked from here. It's a very simple message. Economists are not very clever people. We are professors. But I think the chair summed it up very clearly. You know, growth is down, revenue is going to slow down. You can have that money to spend on more resources and more products. So it's going to sit with that problem in the future, and how are you going to address it? That's the first. Debt is growing, it's going to be a problem for your budget. You're going to have to pay debt, you're going to have to pay interest. How are you going to deal with it? You have a gap between expenditure and revenue, you have a deficit. That is what the country is facing. On top of that, you have inequality, you have poverty, you have unemployment. That's what we tell you on the problem in this regard. So, you're sitting with a problem because you represent South Africa. You're not only government. You represent the people, including government. And you set the direction of this economy, as Honorable Gordon correctly said. So it's your decision now to say, either we accept, you know, the situation of working, or we tell something, some other story. And in the past, Honorable Members, the way society exercised in Parliament was, we got in the department to ask a few questions, and they get at least rubber test. That's all the way we ask questions. But I think today I see a different change of change, you know. There's some more calling for deeper analysis, etc. And I think that's what we need to go. The other thing is we've had a lot of policies in our country. We've had the RTP and now we ended up with the ending. And in between that year, Akisa, you know. But we have very short memories. Every time we change, but no one evaluated that. Now we're sitting with the MP and it's become the Bible, which is good. But, you know, can all the situation think and deliver on anything? Is the fiscal framework still a black framework? You know, or are we going to, you know, challenge it? The point is, someone has to make a hard decision. Someone's going to have to tell education that we can't get 80% of our budget on education and how, and you know what it's going to be. That's, you know, it's sometimes you make the teachers and nurses. So someone's going to have to make the hard decision and say, maybe we're not going to have so many teachers and nurses taking up salary. We get to do something else. But, I'll be too scared to say a political decision. I'd rather leave it to you. but these are some of the hard choices of policy that you have to have to face. In terms of investment, in terms of, When my share was clear of Gauteng, we probably see this the best unit of economic growth in Gauteng. And the reason was that introduced new programs, very targeted, if you remember the Blue IQ stuff. We targeted overseas investment, we targeted kind of user environment, and we found that Gauteng experienced the best unit of economic growth during that period. So the point being made here is that if you start the decision, who's going to champion the changes in the economy? We're going to champion changes, but in terms of investment policy, you know, either of this asking questions. So I think those are the issues, you know, that this document has highlighted already. So next time, hopefully, these questions are asked, you can have, you know, in that situation.
But back on the 29 and the 30 of the first press session, where we engage you more on these issues. Now, having asked these questions, we probably have come to answer ourselves statements by the cabinet to address the strategic session on the 29th. How do we deal with these challenges going forward? Because the issue raised also about budget land increase, the question has always been value for money. Some people have been saying, yes, we see South Africa spending a lot of your resources on education, but the outcome in your education system are not matched by the expenditure. Something wrong, you know, with more progress in education in Zimbabwe in other countries when their budgets are much less than us. So we need to look at how we spend this money. Because sometimes we can promise the money, promise, but not getting the results. Mm-hmm. And that's where the challenge is going to come. That's why our committee has to be tough with the departments in terms of how they're spending the money. Are we getting the kind of outcomes that we intend for? Yeah. But that's, those are the things we're going to get to as this committee strengthens and grows. Because as we say, this is the new approach in Parliament, governing a budget office and the capacity to do the budget. Because if you don't have capacity, I mean, the estimate of national expenditure, I mean, these documents are huge. Many of them are 200 economies, and we're just 10 of us. Yeah. It's a challenge, but I think we're now beginning to grapple and create a Parliament that has capacity. Because Parliament approved budgets, so it must have the requisite capacity to be able to engage and deal with issues. But on the 29th this year, because it's 2 days, we are sitting there in the bush, so we need to get to the gist of these issues. Let's allow the team to respond more.
Oh, can Brandon, can you explain? I think there was a good point about money versus expenditure, maybe.
Look, I'm going to restrict my responses to mostly to the document itself. There are a lot of questions, so I could talk for hours on some technical issues like quantitative easing, credit rating agencies. But you know, if we look at non-interest expenditure, the way the budgets divide expenditure is it looks at interest payments made on government debt, and it looks at non-interest expenditure. The interest payments are mandatory. When we get our revenue, we have to pay our interest payments. What is left over is potentially expenditure for non-interest purposes. So as Nila showed earlier, she showed graphs of the different priority areas, different functional groups were able to spend. The primary expenditure categories in that regard, we've looked at the compensation of employees, we've looked at goods and services, and interest payments would be a major category. So in the reports we'll receive later today, you'll see that we highlight the fact that National Treasury anticipates a slowing in the growth rate of non-interest expenditure. Okay. And that is based on a slowing in the expenditure on compensation and a slowing in the growth rate in expenditure on goods and services. So what we've done is we've asked the question, what happens if those assumptions are not realized? What are the implications for the existing fiscal framework? We basically, and I think it's more of a risk management exercise, we actually highlight the effects, what could happen. Is it larger budget deficits, larger government debts, larger interest expenditure? And remember, the more money you pay for interest, the less you have for other expenditure categories. So that's the trade-off between the two. So non-interest expenditure is paramount to budgets, there's a trade between interest and non-interest, but that's highlighted in the report itself. So again, just to summarize, we look at compensation and we look at goods and services expenditure.
I just want to respond to a few issues. The Honourable Member raised the question of the social grant system, and also education, which seems to be coming up quite often. There's quite a bit of literature on social grants, but the issue that you're referring to is really this question of conditional grants, where we link the resources that people receive to particular programs in order to develop them. And that's what some countries are doing, and then unconditional grants, where essentially we give individuals money. Potentially that's kind of thing the PDO provides some further information, because both types of programs have worked in different contexts, and maybe perhaps in the Latin context what you're suggesting is that we need to think more about the conditional type of social grant. But that is something that there's quite a lot of information on, and we could provide that. Another point I wanted to make is that the other honourable member was talking about Joseph Stiglitz, who actually I happen to know was here in 2002 and gave a confidential briefing to parliamentarians while he was attending a conference. And he has quite maverick views on economics, but many of them are very informative, particularly for developing countries. And one of the things to bear in mind from that sort of perspective is that it is quite a scary situation that we're in some respects. But it's also important to remember that the Treasury strategically increases debt when they engage in what they refer to as counter-cyclical spending. So that's often associated with what's referred to as a Keynesian stunt, where in fact the government tries to compensate for a downturn in the economy, either local or global, by increasing its spending. And that necessarily leads to an increase in debt. So it's also important not to be too intimidated by the situation. So, you know, and the PBO has already been given an indication, I think, by both the Finance and the Appropriations Committees that there's some interest in knowing why this is taking place, what are the causes of low growth, and so on. And then the final thing I wanted to say is about education, since this is an example that keeps coming up. The situation actually in the education sector is on the one hand well known, and yet on the other hand also quite complicated, because while I'm sure the members will be very aware of the work that's been done on poor outcomes in the education sector, and that there's a lot of that. It's also known that we still have things like excessive class sizes in schools. So again, that's something perhaps that we could go into more detail on somewhat outside the scope of this meeting. But these are all very important questions. And I think if members are interested in some particular issues, perhaps the chair could make a request to the PDO for follow-up for an issue.
Okay, some more courses also deal with quantitative easing.
I just want to follow up on another thing that's also got a reading from Tech and Sanitary in terms of the general health of suicide. And we try to use some of the most outcomes that the day-to-day general health of suicide with its ending in terms of the functional group. And we saw that again in the session and in health, we've seen in previous periods, we've seen a lot of money where there's a huge growth in education and in health, but there was actually no difference in the outcome over time. In education, 2002, 73% of the age 5 to 24 were in educational institutions. And at this stage, in 2030, the exact same amount of that age group is currently in those educational institutions. And some other side also from the General Health Survey is that 50% of our population is dependent on social grants. And just in contrast to that, it's only 12% of the population contribute to the tax base. So there's a huge gap between the two as well. And in terms of now, 70% of our households actually makes use of our health services. And there's only a small percentage, I think only 18% of our population has got medical aid. So there's this huge need and we'll be able to provide for all of these things in terms of the very specific population.
I just wanted to touch quickly on the issue on recession. Somebody mentioned the recession there. I'm not going to mention the recession. There's various ways, of course, to look at what recession, how recession how do you assess whether he's calling to the session or not. But the common way or killer way is consecutive contraction in economics. You know, if we have consecutive quarters, like the first quarter we had a contraction, we have a second quarter contract as well, it will probably be popularly known that the country is calling to the session. And at the moment, the Minister of Finance I don't think the second quarter will have a contraction. So we only have one tenth, so we are not yet in the recession, because we only have one tenth of contraction. But there's a better factor that we look into, and of course the impact it will have on the economy, the stability of active monetary, but at the moment the 15 is so in a way, not yet a recession, if that's what we will be recession.
No, I asked the question, what is the view of the PTO? The economic analyst is saying in recession and Minister is saying, but look at the report that has been presented and it has summarized it very well. Everything is which direction is taking? Are we going maybe to survive if we look at the trend now that the moving the direction is moving to? That's what we're trying to get, because really it's a concern. Mm. Everything, you know, this price hike and so on, and unable to manage to pay, you know, the debt, as Bob was indicating, that may result to us having that challenge if we don't really come up with some intervention measures to the product at the moment.
Okay, not the end recession. Any benefit from in the foreseeable future recession?
Chair, thank you. I think two consecutive quarters of no growth is a technical recession. And I think we've had that document for dinner. So we're in a, I think that what they say is just two points. But there's disagreements here. You know, economists, as I say, are not very clever chefs. They disagree on different things. You know. I think the Reserve Bank chair, three quarters, particularly it's two quarters. Quantitative easing chair. Basically, I think the point that Short mentioned is what the Americans did was they spent their way out of their profit share. And they pumped more money into the fund, hoping, you know, that would stimulate. I think you were just going to say, you know, that would stimulate consumption. And people grab more money, and they buy their way out of the fund. So they put a lot of money through different ways. They gave people tax breaks, and they put the people of cash in. They spent more money on investment, infrastructure, etc. So I'd like to do it wrong. Because our counter-cyclical policy is almost similar to quantitative easing in the sense that you're also pumping money to the economy, you know, through. So where they stop this process, of course it has an impact not only as American, but also, you know, South African economy. I think there's a lag. You'll probably be feeling it very soon. So basically that is what they need to do, quantitative easing in that sense.
Thanks, Robbie. So just to add, so when an economy is in recession and households are in debt, and you know, households are unable to service debt, financial institutions, rightfully so, have an issue with lending money. So what tends to happen is that liquidity in an economy will dry up. So there's not a lot of free money going around. That tends to slow down consumption expenditure. And consumption expenditure is one of the core components of economic growth, generally speaking. So what you know, the way reserve banks generally handle this, reserve banks are one of their core functions is to control money supply. What they generally do is they will engage in what they call open market operations. They will buy what we call short-term debt securities, which are basically contracts. They will go and buy these contracts from members of the public or from institutions, and in so doing, they put money into the economy. But these are very usually the conventional way of handling money supplies target these short-dated
debt. So debt, debt that has a 15-day maturity or 15-day maturity or whatever it may be. Due is slightly different in that it's regarded as being unconventional money monetary policy, in that the Reserve Bank in the US will target debt securities with long maturities, 50 years, 20 years, and not just that, they'll intervene in various markets, for example, in the housing markets. The central bank will actually go and make purchase, they will purchase assets in those markets so that they can reduce the prices and lower the interest rates in those markets. And all that effectively does is it creates liquidity, it gets money into people's hands. Okay, it also tends to inflate the asset prices in those particular markets, but that's a negative side effect. But ultimately the goal is to get money into people's hands. I always say sometimes you've got to drop money from the helicopter to try and disseminate cash, and it's an unconventional way of trying to increase the money supply and increase consumption. So that is in a nutshell what QE is.
The other comment, Chair, on unemployment, I think Honourable Member, that why didn't we indicate the unemployment rate to mention slowing economic growth as you talked about? We talked about this, and we thought this we can do in everything related to this, we're going to have a 100-page document, like Brendan said, if we have to discuss the whole report, it can take days. But then, and Prof mission, is this the kind of report that you want to receive? So maybe in future we can know what we need to include for which committee. But it's true, unemployment went up also with a slow economic growth. Unemployment in South Africa is one of the economic challenges, even when we had a possible economic growth was increasing. Unemployment was still up. Now it's just, you know, making it worse. We don't have an increase in employment opportunities when our economy is growing, because we know the economic growth is not guaranteed. Sometimes we get into it, if we have an increase in the economy, when the economic growth, we need to increase in employment opportunities. But that's not a guarantee that you're going to have an increase in employment opportunities, because you can be replacing people with machines. So you're not employing anyone, but then you still have economic growth. Or you can have efficiency. People who are already employed be more productive, and they are able to make economic growth without employing anyone. So we can bring in the employment figures to make the economic growth data in the future.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I'll leave most of this question for our workshop, since we're going to have a workshop shortly. But I want to clarify, first of all, I'd like to know who in fact owns the Reserve Bank, number one. As far as I know, owns the Reserve Bank. Yeah. And the second thing is this, would the high imports, what role does the Reserve Bank play, and how can, because it's the Reserve Bank that basically controls, or as you say, in ensuring that our rent performs better or not. So I'd like to get some clarity on that. And added to that is, I just wanted to know, in terms of the employment, do we not also believe that these imports and things are creating and the impact of people also creating a high unemployment rate? Thank you.
The question about the recession still concerns me. I thought it was easy. The definition states that there's a decline to consecutive quarters. Now, Professor Jad has two options here. He's either to agree with the minister or to agree with the economist. And I think his job is probably agree with the minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, next to unemployment is poverty. I have always wondered what is it that actually prevents us from dealing with poverty. what is it that we can do to deal with poverty? I made an observation, maybe in the rural area, that every January, when there are new teachers, the insurance people are very busy in schools, finding up some order. And I would like us to do a study on the effect of this insurance policies on salary earners, whether in fact they are not increasing our poverty. Because I remember when I was the first two salary when I was at MP in 1994, I actually went to the bank and they take 2,000 from my money and put it aside. Then later on I was called by the bank to say, Mrs. Sithole, you see, we see you are a good saver. We want to convert your savings into a policy. You know, it went on, and I lost all the money. And because I went there as a rural woman, knowing that I must just put money into a savings account, and I was able to do that. And I think I would be able to get a lot of money by now. But this insurance policy, if we can conduct a research on the, maybe on the good that it is doing, but I'm not convinced at this point in time. That is one. Two, the effect of causing, maybe let me put it this way, the causing of our inability, the inability of small business to grow by this confusion. I read something last year that the Competition Commission is busy with. And I was not aware of this thing. It was the first time I read about it. But ever since, I worry that if we can stop this, which I call high-class corruption of big business, of stopping other people from trying to enter into the market, perhaps we can create jobs. But as long as we've got this type of big blockage stopping so many small rural people from making their own little businesses, I don't see how we're going to break this cycle of unemployment and even economic growth. Because I believe that if my family has got this type of shop at the street and Mom can see another type of shop, the whole street will be itching. Instead of having one big person eating everything until it's sick and having sugar, diabetes, and high blood pressure, which actually eats up in the system on its budget of health. So I would like us to sort of look at a research on those three, unemployment and the prevention of economic growth by this people who are candidates of the Competition Commission, and see if we cannot even strengthen Competition Commission, because I read a lot of them being not very able to do things quickly. You know, things like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, and let me start with what's wrong there for me. Poverty, inequality, unemployment has been around, I think, and people were characterized, unfortunately, as what needed from 94 to where we are now. But we don't deal with it, it will come from the new government, or the new administration, or the new political dispensation. Unfortunately, Chair, you know, we contribute to poverty because in part of the legislation set the tone for the economy. So how do we exercise an oversight role and what we expect from budgets and from departments and how we monitor that is our one of breaking out of that poverty cycle. The point is we can't take too micro view, especially at legislation level, we do within a macro community. So you're taking a broad view, you know, of government the budget, etc. Okay, so now the details of it. But you said you are in this, and you have to provide the overall guidance in that respect. And up to this point, Honorable Shoghi, you know, like you have market failures, and when you have market failures, the government intervenes and addresses the market failures. Sometimes it does improve escorts, etc., etc. You know, it's a simple example of you have a failure of the market, and you create a market, like Eskom, like GBSA, IDC, to accept that failure. But you also have government failures. You know, so what you do is address government failures, and you just say, okay, now, let the private sector stop it, you know, do their own stuff. So how do you balance these two things in terms of a developmental stuff? It's something you're going to have to say. And then I think your point is good, you know, what you said is tongue in cheek. But who's you to be safe? You know, now, as a bus office, and this is, I think, a lesson for my colleagues as well, we will take a view on this. We will take our view from you. So if you say, this is a view of this commission, that's our view. Because we work for you. we don't work for the regulator. We have to support you, and in this committee there's three quarters, we agree. Well, the reserve back is held by my, it's a big funny situation, on the board side, in South Africa.
Go ahead.
Okay. It's a very funny situation here, that, you know, the main shareholder of South Africa is the government. But we have a funny kind of colonial arrangement which we haven't addressed, where we still have smaller individuals or groups that are shareholders. So, but we can just monetary policy for South Africa. And I don't think the shareholding has influenced the change. I think we have lost it. But you are better than me.
I have not been to the AGM. So we will look at it again, as the Prof is saying that there are individual shareholders, so the Reserve Bank always calls AGMs for those shareholders to discuss. But I don't know how much they own some of these ones, but I think you can safely say that the biggest shareholder is the South African government. On our behalf, the people of South Africa. So we hope that we still respect. But there are individual shareholders. I think maybe the office can go investigate in detail so that we understand it very well next time. Does somebody want to follow up, or are we done?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Like a good guest, I was trying to keep quiet because this is my first time, and I'm here to observe, to study, to learn, and to listen. With a view to making our offerings, our academic offerings, more responsive to national demands. As you may know, the Vet School of Governance started in 1993 and has grown significantly since then. We are in the process of offering academic degrees, most only postgraduate, from postgraduate diploma to PhDs. But not only that, we offer executive and short courses. And in this regard, we have historically worked with the provinces of Mpumalanga. We have a center-based industry. We have worked with the Gauteng government in offering training programs for mostly government officials in various short courses, including project management, leadership, and so on and so on. So recently, we had a relationship with the Legislative Forum. And through that arrangement with Palama, now the National School of Government, ran a, what I could call a fairly successful program, certificate of competence for members of the legislature from national as well as provincial levels or spheres. And through that program we have grown the program from testing a certificate of competence to a postgraduate diploma. And this month, I think, we'll, or possibly later this coming month, we will have a cohort of parliamentarians who are going to be finalizing and finishing their courses in the postgraduate diploma in governance and public leadership. So my message here was to take an offer from the head to come and listen to the appropriations committees and other committees and to learn about the committee work that is being done here. And then to go back to my school and talk to my colleagues around how we can fulfill some of the capacity needs that exist here at the national as well as on provincial levels.
You are a very important guest. We're going to need that capacity, yes.
Thank you. So the one aspect that our panel member raised today, which I agree and emphasize the point, is on the impact on the slow growth we have. I think the slow growth is coming, obviously have negative impact on how much money government would have to be able to fulfill its objectives of. Now, trying to bring a link between chairmanship, the AG role and object, and also bring the monetary aspect of the government finishes, it would probably from outside role to have that link clearly conscious. You know, say, this is how much we are so paid for this package. What has been done with that money? And is there any room for touching the bell in terms of the future operations and all monetary aspect? And that also becomes important, you know, as a oversight committee on that. So I want to highlight that the impact less money to spend. Now what can we do to monitor to ensure efficiency in government program expenditure? And how do we use the aging roles and or the report of the monetary aspect to say which areas we can tighten the belt because we have lesser money to spend in costs. Which areas are we underspending or we are overspending or we are wasting money or whatever the situation is, which we can impact down at the point of in terms of appropriating. So I think this is the impact that we could begin to. Obviously, there's a lot of factors, you know, that involve economic growth, which some can't control as a government or the parliament. But what can we do as a matter of fact to try to manage the impact of that? I want to highlight that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Why are you laughing? First of all, the content advisor to the committee. Anything in the content file, you think there's something was left out?
Thanks, Chairperson. I thank for this opportunity. As your president, thanks, Prof, and thanks for the team for the presentation. I think it was well made and well presented. And the last point in particular, that did highlight the link with AG, the link with SCOPA, the work that the Appropriations Committee does in terms of is it ex ante, protective, we prevent what the AG normally finds, underspending, underperforming, and all of these issues. And the planning the head possibility for it. We do look forward to that. We will engage more on this. There will be other stakeholders as well. There will be state SA, it was mentioned initially in Zinco, but it's also important it's not just that has come to my mind now because the a lot of the products that come out of state SA, they did indicate in the quiet vote that I did attend it. They are trying to disseminate this information, but it's not having the necessary impact in terms of usage, especially for oversight institutions, committees in particular. This information is not utilized to inform the executive when they come in place. And these are the issues that we're picking up. This is the latest that you're picking up. Is this addressed or not? So, thanks, Mr. Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable members, anything from our side? Enough for today, Honorable.
Sorry. there's some clarity on that, the income on that, on that exchange dollar, rand dollar. If you could just clarify that first.
Okay. I think the purpose of the Reserve Bank is one reason and one objective only, and that's to protect the value of the rand, to ensure price stability. So the Reserve Bank function through monetary policy, which is to ensure price stability. That prices, the domestic economy are stable. And that is one objective. There are other Reserve Banks in the world that have two objectives shared. I think in the States that it's price stability and job creation, or unemployment, or GDP growth, or, you know. In our country, it's price stability, and that is the sole objective. We have adopted an inflation targeting policy as a monetary policy framework, remember, that 3-6%. So we say inflation must remain between 3-6%, and if it's in that band, you know, prices will be relatively stable. If you remember that difference. Also, if you remember, Kotaku and some of the other institutions are saying, but why is it in 3-6% here? Because increasing to maybe 9%. You know, and I don't think people have looked at the implications of what's going on here. Maybe you can increase, you know, the band, and maybe it also maintain that price. But the short answer is, the purpose of the Reserve Bank and monetary policy is to ensure that it's price stability, that the rand is protected, that it is stable price. Other than that,
just a follow-up on that one. My concern is the rate of exchange. How do we bring that down and give more value to the rand? And is it a good thing in essence to do that? You know, that's what I'm ready for.
Thanks. So as Paul was saying, the primary lender of the Reserve Bank is actually part of the list. Okay, so the impact of the Reserve Bank's policy rate has on the exchange rate is quite a big debate at the moment. I tend to think that has a minimal influence on the exchange rate. So the exchange, so that exchange rate is what we call floating exchange rate. It's not controlled at all. So it's subject to foreign capital flows from all over the world. Investors, for example, are interested in investing in South African stocks and bonds. Foreign investors are interested in making direct investments into infrastructure, for example. So these foreign capital flows tend to determine the value of the rand. Now, whether or not it's a good idea to have a stronger rand or a weaker rand, at the entity you speak to, exporters will want a weaker rand. South African households will probably want a stronger rand, because a stronger rand tends to have, for example, inflation in South Africa is largely driven, at this stage, this is my personal point, largely driven by the exchange rate. So a stronger rand has implications for imports. Our imports are relatively cheaper. Our products are generally cheaper, goods and services are generally cheaper. And therefore we have a low rate of inflation, so it increases household wealth. That's one view. But as I said, the entity you speak to, in terms of determining what the right level of exchange rate is, it's a matter of perspective. But it's a difficult question. Yeah.
I think the question that all of us want to know is how is the rand value determined? Is a 13? What is a 13 rand? So rand, like any other commodity, you know, bread, etc., is a tradable product. So we sell our currency on the market, and if people like it, they buy it. You know, like coke for bread or something. So when they buy our currency internationally, what happens? Price of the currency goes up. They demand a lot of rand that goes up. If they don't want our currency, it goes down. Why would they want our currency? Because we are stable economy. Because we have lots of jobs, we have great investment opportunities, that pushes up the value of the rand. If you don't have that, you have a bad economy, you have strike every day, you have poor skill, you have poverty, inequality, no one has invest, value of the rand will come. So that's how the currency value determines, as opposed to other currencies. Now what we normally would be charted in terms of the past of currencies. So we say the rand dollar. The rand, yen. You can't just look at rand dollar. That's only one intention. You have to look at it in terms of the total basket and then get,
So that's how the value of the rent. So if you want the rent improved and you want to push it up, make sure that the environment is right, make sure that you have the right investment, make sure it's other people, it's a big city where people want to come to. And the rent will drop. If you don't like it, that's right. Carry on with what you're doing now.
Okay. More discussion at the third session. Anything from your side? You are back. She's our senior researcher. Always want to hear the latest people. So we are fine for that. Okay, we are fine for that. Honorable members, let's thank our office. You see, I'm bringing you closer. We thank the budget office. We are very happy now that we know that we are together. We will never complain about capacity. We give you more and more work to strengthen this committee. This is a good start. We now have a sense of the role of the office and how we're going to work together going forward. So, enough for today. I know that at the spread session you also invite us. We have to be part of that as we discuss this issue. Tomorrow we are meeting the FSC at 9. I'm correct. Yeah. 9 o'clock, honorable members, in the FSC. I don't know the budget office participate in those. If you will then, okay. Let me just, you want to say something? You want to go on record?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, another member. I just got something that came up during the meeting with the Standing Committee on Finance, that the issue of economic growth came up quite strongly. And what was suggested was that there should be an in-depth research done into that would lead to a proper diagnosis of what the causes of the current economic stuff is. And that committee, I think it will also be, maybe this committee should be aware of that, they asked for a link between industrial policy, macroeconomic policy, of fiscal policy and monetary policy. And when we started doing that research and the research in that particular trade cluster, initially I thought maybe they could do something quickly, but the trade researcher said, you know, we need people in different sectors who are going to input into this. The trade researcher must tell us what the blocks are, the energy research, public enterprises, what are the issues with ESCOM and other big public companies. And I think that it might take time, but eventually, because it involves a lot of sectors, it involves a lot of people who specialize in different knowledge sectors, but the idea is at the end of the day, even if it takes a few weeks or months maybe, what we will present to the committees will be a broad consolidated view of what are the challenges in the economy, in specific sectors, and how they all link together, and also link them to fiscal and monetary policy. So just to address this committee that the finance committee is dealing with something like that. And it looks like this committee also needs that kind of information.
All right, I'm sure honorable members, you agree that it's enough for today. And thanks to Prof and the Chief. It is 25-1. Honorable Chief, the second round. But it's good, I think it's the last one. Some tea and refreshments.
something within budget.
Within the budget.
Thank you very much, everybody. I'll see you. I have a good time tomorrow and tonight. We'll be missing FD or the five. All that will be done. I thank you. Very good.